B-Pod Studios.
App. Making the workday a little more entertaining.
Floppity flop flop flop. There.
It's Zoe and the Beetle on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The do's and don'ts for keeping safe on the course.
Needham Golf Club Superintendent Tim Hood said once they get the green light from the government, he'll be ready with some new rules of etiquette. Everything from not raking the bunker to more relaxed putting.
And that's considered in the hole.
But it seems a lot of golfers aren't willing to wait. We spotted people taking some hacks at this private club in Newton, teeing off from this public course in Brookline, and putting on the green at the nine-hole location in Westwood.
You know, it's really not something that we're endorsing right now. We want to wait for that all clear and make sure that people are doing the right thing.
In your mind, is golf essential?
Absolutely.
Despite concerns over virus transmission, golfers we talked to insisted this is an activity they can enjoy responsibly.
I'm in the woods most of the time anyway, so that's a good safe place.
And they're just hoping the governor understands.
Tell him I'm sorry, but I'm having a great time.
Oh, yeah. Good B-roll there of all these people standing right next to each other on the golf courses. What was this? What day did this report come out, Jim? March 30th? A week ago. Yeah, a lot of social distancing going on there. Is golf essential? Oh, of course it is. This is the thing. These guys, we've already proven that the golfers can't follow the rules. I mean, because this is a state order now, and they haven't been able to follow the rules.
Some are idiots.
Some are
idiots, and they're going to do what they're doing regardless. I've had two people that are in state government text me in the last hour and said they want the courses open too.
Not because they golf,
but to help these.
Good for them. Was one of them the governor of Massachusetts?
No, I could text him. He's a little busy.
Oh.
I'm not going to
You know, he's too busy? You don't want to text him? Why don't you send him over a letter about opening the golf courses?
Nope. That guy's got too much to deal with right now.
Zoe thinks he's too busy to even get a text message.
He doesn't need text from a guy doing a sports show.
Even a word of encouragement? Like, hey, boss, you're doing a great job? Nothing?
Nope.
He must be a very busy guy. Must be dealing with serious stuff right now.
Yep. I hope he picked out which sign language guy to go with today or lady. They are so damn entertaining and... Boy, are they deliberate.
Let's go to
more of him than I get out of the governor.
Matt, who's in the car? Matt.
Hey guys, what's going on?
What's up?
Hey, can I preface by saying I really enjoy your show, and Beetle, you are not a moron, and all of you are very intelligent and eloquent, so thank you. I appreciate your essentialness. But I have to side with Hardy here, because if we really were taking any of this stuff seriously, first of all, I'm a builder. Why aren't they carding me when I go into Home Depot? Why don't they want to see my builder's license? But to take it to it in a different way, nobody has mentioned the Constitution. Freedom of press, speech, assembly, petition.
Which amendment is the freedom to golf? Is that like, what number is that Bill of Rights?
It's assembly, Beetle. It's the First Amendment.
It's the 18th.
Stop it. You can't be serious.
Hey, listen, if you can do it safely, you know, how many of our liberties are going to take away from us? You know, when they're...
This is your crew, Hardy.
How many liberties?
Don't
worry about that.
Oh my God.
You do not want to know who's on my side on this one and on your side on this one. Look at your email. Look at your Twitter feed. It is.
I'm not doing that. No,
not
no, good.
Why would no, I do no, that? Nor should you. But if you say that is indicative, I will give you all the comments and all the tweets. And it is, I'd say it's about a 99-1 ratio right now.
People are not winning
on your side on this one.
Yeah, no, it's okay. When does that ever stop me? Please.
I'm just saying, don't go down the road of, oh, that's what your side is. No, there's an overwhelming majority don't see any problem with the spreading of coronavirus with having people walking on a golf course. And
well,
not
how many of the 99 of the 100 people have called the governor's office or protested? I'd like to know. I think you should call them. As an active, politically active citizen who's concerned about liberties, I think you should go right on over to the State House and stand out there with a sign that says open the golf courses.
That is the new protocol. Whenever someone has an opinion on public
policy, I'm joking,
health or otherwise.
Hardy, I'm joking.
Yes,
it was obviously said tongue-in-cheek.
Contact the governors. All right.
God. Ryan in Falmouth. Ryan.
Hey, good morning, guys. So I think there's a couple of great points and a lot of people saying, you know, a lot of important stuff here, but You know, I'm an avid golfer. I love to get out there on the golf course, but I think the big problem is that there's a lot of people that could be out on the golf course and safely social distance while playing golf. The problem is that you have those few people that do not know how to do that. And it kind of goes back to, you know, when we were in high school or elementary school, the one bad apple ruins the bunch. And I mean, I know of at least two cases out here on the Cape where people have, where somebody has tested positive for the coronavirus and then refused to quarantine. And the police had to be sent to their house and, you know, stricter rules and people watching them had to go into place. But there's so many golf courses. Where I am here in Falmouth, there's eight courses right around me within 10 minutes. You open up golf courses and you get people congregating and everybody is itching and dying to get out, whether you're a golfer, whether you're not, somebody's just going to pick up a club and head out there. You're risking the public safety of everybody else around you. And I'm an avid golfer and I can't wait for the golf courses to get open. But now, as people have said, it's just not the time. I think once we hit that May 4th, we have a better idea of where we stand with the virus and then slowly be able to start opening up, you know, and safely social distancing. But as soon as somebody with that virus, whether they have it and they know it or whether they have it and they don't, you know, they put the risk at everybody else of this not coming to an end.
Right.
Well,
I mentioned that.
I agree with him that, you know, the best case scenario right now is that everyone stays inside their homes. But that's not the order, and that's not what people are doing. And there are people are leaving the house for all kinds of reasons, and they're going to all kinds of places right now. And the golf course is, I would say, the least likely place out of all the places you could mention right now, and that includes state parks where there are walking trails and they've had to do, you know, one-way directions in some places to keep people from passing each other. You don't even get that on a golf course. So unless everyone is ordered to stay inside your house, don't open the door, don't go outside for any reason, there is no reason to say yes to going outside, walking the streets, going to Home Depot, doing all these other things, and no to something like a golf course where you are very, very unlikely to come into contact with anybody other than maybe the one person or two people that you're out there with. And even with those people, you can maintain great social distances away from each other, great physical distancing away from each other. It's just it unless you're going to put the hammer down and say no one leave the house, there's no need to keep the golf courses closed. There just isn't.
To go back to what I had originally said today about the timing of the request being, in my mind, just completely ludicrous to request that the governor reconsider the order. This does, as of right now, and I know that this date has changed a few times when it comes to school closures and things of the like, the May 4th date, I'd be far more accepting of requesting this come May 4th if it hadn't been lifted. But the fact that they couldn't wait, right now, 3.5 weeks to get to that point and get through the surge that is expected over the next couple of weeks, that to me is just insane. Like that just speaks to a lack of complete awareness of the situation and consideration for what is actually going on in the real world and not on the golf course. Like if this request were to come next month, Hardy, I think I'd feel a lot differently about it. I think I would. And again, things change by the day, so it's hard to know. But the fact is, it happened right now in the thick of everything, in the middle of what is happening. And that's it just seems a little ridiculous right now.
Yeah, don't go golf. Go to Dollar General.
That's the loophole, but whatever. Different topic. Hardy, you got anything else you wanted to add?
I actually have somebody who might want to come on and join us if you want to extend this at all. He's with the New England PGA. So if you want to talk with him, we can do that next, unless you want to move on to something else. This is a conversation we can have off the air.
No. Now I'm going to do it, because if I don't do it, I'm going to be accused of shutting down the topic. So go ahead. Put him on. We'll talk to him next.
No,
What's his name? Let's tease it.
He just emailed me, so I'll double check. His name is Michael Higgins. He's a really good guy, and we can have a measured conversation with him.
Major.
He's the executive director and CEO of the New England PGA.
Michael Higgins next.
Nice.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Something.
You gotta wear your lucky jersey. Don't wash the lucky socks.
Rub your ball 16 times. Yep.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now back to Zolak and Bertrand on Boston's home for sports.
Welcome back to Zolak and Bertrand, 11:20 here on, what day of the week is it? It's Thursday. Losing track of the days. It's Thursday. Let's go to the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Welcome in the Executive Director of PGA New England, and that would be Michael Higgins, is now on the line. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Sure, Mike.
So what are your thoughts on the current situation with golf course closures?
Yeah, so we've obviously, as a PGA section, been talking about this for a while. We've been meeting with all of our allied golf associations, so the state golf associations throughout New England, the owners, superintendents, club managers, obviously the safety of human beings is the most important thing, right? So, you know, we're taking a stance where, you know, if you're in a state where golf is open, that we truly support that. We support the best practices to keep employees and golfers safe. We strongly encourage everyone to do as much as they can to keep golf safe. But if we're in a state where our leaders, our doctors, our scientists are saying to stand down, we're encouraging golf courses to do that until we get the green light to allow us to get out there and play.
Hey Michael, it's Hardy. Did you have any consultations with the organization that made the formal request to the state government about putting golf courses on the essential business list? Did you consult them at all? Do you know what the argument was from their side?
Are you referring to the petition that was going around, the online signatures?
From the golf course, I guess it was the Golf Course Owners Association, essentially.
Yeah, so I know they spoke with the Massachusetts Golf Association, and then Jesse Menachem, who's the ED of Mass Golf, shared with our alliance group, you know, those conversations. And I think they're coming from the angle where I do truly believe that golf can be safe. I do think if certain precautions are taken, that there is a safe environment and you can take advantage of the therapeutic and the healthy environment that golf can have. I do think there are things you can do that can make golf unsafe. And hopefully facilities don't do that and golfers don't do that. And we look at the big picture, you know, if we can shut it down for a couple of weeks to salvage the rest of the golf season, I think that's something to think about. And you know, those facilities that are illegally opening or not doing what they're supposed to do, it doesn't help our cause to get golf open sooner, you know, and that sheds a bad light on our industry and our business. And that's not who we are as golfers and associations and whatnot. And I think in the big picture, you know, that's not good for the game, and it's not good for getting it open.
All right, so I agree with that, Mike. And you know, you're not UFC, but everybody's got a spreadsheet. Like my buddy owns a bar. He's been doing some takeout, and he goes, I could do this for one more month, and that is it. Then my business is dead. Do you have golf courses coming to you to where they said we could maybe float this for another month, maybe 2 months? Is there any long range or short range? I said from a bulk of them where they could really financially get into trouble.
Yeah. Oh no, absolutely. I mean, and those golf courses facilities, you know, are having those conversations right now. And you know, we're looking at the CARES Act, and a lot of golf courses are, you know, classified as 501c6s and 501c7s, and they're not eligible for the PPP. But they, you know, they potentially are eligible for the small business loans to try to help
you know, their operations. Those that are for profit and those that, you know, are not a C6 or C7 are potentially able to apply for, you know, the PPP loan to stay afloat. And I mean, you look at the whole industry. I mean, Titleist, Ahead, Callaway, you know, all have businesses in Massachusetts that are forced to shut down. You know, Titleist can't make a golf ball right now in the United States, and that's, you know, they can't ship out an order. It's yeah. Our business is really, really impacted, and it's from across the board. And so many people are employed in golf, and some are trying to stay open with takeout, and numbers have been great supporting their clubs and their facilities. And thankfully, maintenance is open, and the golf courses are able to be maintained. I mean, if that wasn't allowed, oh man, we'd have golf courses really having a difficult conversation of, can we even recover from this? And, you know, and I think, you know, as it gets warmer, you know, and the weather gets a little bit better, you know, it's going to be more and more difficult to feel the calls from golfers and facilities and owners, you know, that are struggling. It's nice how we can't be on the golf course. It's hard. It's really hard. A lot of people are struggling.
But your understanding is that this is going to come to an end on May 4th. Is that what you're working on right now?
That's our impression. I mean, obviously, you know, I think from a lot of the stuff we're hearing that, you know, this the coronavirus could come to a head in the next week or so, and that may potentially delay things. I don't know, but right now we're under the assumption that May 4th it'll be lifted, and we're trying to do our part. All of our allied groups we're trying to come up with some, you know, best practices that facilities can utilize when they do open, you know, how to keep people safe and employees safe. But golf's going to look completely different tournament-wise once we get back up and running. You know, our New England PGA events, I don't know, even if golf comes back on May 4th, we're going to be able to have a shotgun or, you know, a buffet, you know, lunch. I mean, it's going to be completely different starting times and delaying the starting times, and maybe it's box lunches instead of, you know, awards presentations. Ceremonies are going to be look a little different. Your club championship, you know, corporate outings may look a little different. And I think that's where facilities and businesses will get creative. And we're already looking at, you know, rescheduling some April and May events to June, July, and August. And we'll see how the fall looks. I think all of our facilities are feeling it.
This is Michael Higgins. He's the executive director and CEO of the New England section of the PGA of America. Michael, you know, what you just mentioned, I don't think anyone is going to, you know, shed a tear for golfers who can't go in and have a sit-down lunch. But I think what you're referring to there is the trickle effect that you see from golf and all these other businesses that are shut down. And golf has a tremendous charitable impact on the community. And I don't just mean with the millions that the PGA Tour gives back, more than any other of the major sports in this country in terms of their charitable donations every year. But the sheer number of, like, locally held and privately put on charity golf tournaments that take place every single week, multiple times a week, at different golf courses, that's going to be impacted too. Not that people have necessarily a ton of money for charitable giving this year, but it just speaks again to that trickle-down effect that you know, this is going to have on the economy at large, and unfortunately for charitable donations as the rest of this spring and summer goes on.
Oh, sure. So many organizations and charitable groups rely on their golf tournaments as one of their major fundraisers for the year.
The Jimmy Fund is a huge one. CBS
Charity Classic down in Rhode Island. I know it's Rhode Island, but yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, jerseys. Yeah, I mean, there's so many. And that's a great point, Hardy, because think about it, too. You got businesses and corporations that when you get back, that have laid off and furloughed people and actually fired people, do they really want to, you know, spend on tournaments, you know, in buffet lunches? Or else do you really want to just get employees back? And it's a trickle-down effect that long-term can hurt them. And that's what you worry about.
Well, you think about the post-golf ceremonies at the charitable events, you know, the live auctions and the money raisers. Yeah, you can't gather. That's where the charity's going to feel the hit right there, too.
All right, so to go back to an earlier point, you had said that the courses that may not be listening or may have opened without permission, what about the golfers that are going out there on their own and hitting the courses even when they're closed? Does that help or hurt your cause right now?
Well, I think it hurts. I think it hurts the cause. I really do. You know, I think we're being asked, you know, by our state leaders to treat the game as non-essential. And, you know, as associations and groups behind the scenes, we're trying to get golf back open when it is truly, truly safe. And if it appears that we're not doing our part as golfers or facilities, it's going to make it more difficult to make our case, you know. Certainly my personal thoughts on it.
Well, Michael,
yeah, I mean, may disagree.
No, and I think it's, you know, it makes it tougher when you see people, you know, kind of disregarding any rules or any measures that are already in place. And to that end, I'm not completely in favor of this 100% across the board. I think that, you know, courses that are open in other states or certain areas where that's only one person to a card or only this, no, you know, forget all that. I want the courses to be able to get some kind of income. I want people to go out and be able to, you know, and get some, you know, get some exercise, as a lot of, you know, healthcare professionals are actually advocating right now. But do it in a way to where you're not going to have any contact with anybody. Walking only, groups of no more than two, you know, no flag sticks, no bunker rakes, no golf ball, ball washers or anything going on. And if all that can be in place, then I'm in favor of this. But unfortunately, anybody who, you know, decides to be a scofflaw at this time is going to go out on the course and do things their own way. No, like a lot of other things right now, a couple of people are going to screw it up for everybody else. So there's going to have to be some pretty strict measures in place if this is going to happen.
I couldn't agree more. I think golf can be safe. I think it can be a great outlet. I think it can be utilized properly. And those policies and best practices that we're trying to put together and help facilities and help golfers, I think can help golf get back sooner. And those that follow it, and I think if the state could come up with potential penalties for golfers or facilities that don't follow us once we're allowed to get back, I think that might help. I think that would be, wise. The more that we can communicate, you know, I think the governor of New Hampshire said it great. He's the one that's actually said golf and spoken about golf in his presentations. He said it doesn't make any sense for New Hampshire to open up golf yet if Massachusetts and Maine and Vermont are not open, because we're going to get saturated with golfers right from everywhere. You know, if we can do this collaboratively as a region, because our states are so close together, I'd love if we can get the governors to communicate with one another. And when we do, when we are allowed to golf and we are allowed to play, that there's some synergy, and then we can all open together. So there's not the stress of, you know, everyone going to Massachusetts or everyone going to Rhode Island or, you know, everyone, you know, going to certain facilities. I think that could help.
All right, Matt. Mike, appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on. Man.
Thanks, guys, very much.
Hey, Mike. Good talk to you, Michael.
That is Michael Higgins from PGA New England, who is talking about the current situation with golf courses. We'll get Hardy's headlines, and then we have a number of items to get to, including some stuff on the Patriots, some things being said ahead of the draft, and the direction they could take. We'll jump into all that coming up next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Zolak and Bertrand continues on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Zolak and Bertrand here on this Thursday, 617-779-0985. Do you remember the conversation we had about the Patriots probably like a month ago now? About the four options.
Yeah, pick three? I remember talking about the Patriots.
Yeah.
No, it was four. It was four different options that Jim sort of offered us about middling it.
One. Yeah.
You know, do you want to go full tear down?
Yes.
Do you want to middle it?
Yes.
Jim, do you have exactly how we worded that at the time?
Yeah.
Those four options?
Four options. Do you let the defensive players go and rebuild the offense around Brady and load up on offense?
Right.
Do you, number two, do you load up on defense and you keep, you don't, you let Brady go and you just load up on the defense and the defense wins your games? Number three, you middle it and try to bring back some of the defensive players and bring back Brady. And number four was a total rebuild.
So of those four options, have the Patriots done any of those things is the question. Now that we know what happened with Brady.
Two. Kind of.
Load up on defense?
Well, I mean, you secured your secondary. You brought in secondary help. You added depth to the safety position. Let's see what they do in the draft. I mean, that's the thing. Like, if they go linebacker, edge guy, or down guy, we're like, Jesus, okay, they're going defense.
I would argue
it feels like they're going defense.
I would argue they're closest to total rebuild. I mean, I would not consider any of their moves that they made, at least to this point. And like you said, it could change in 2 weeks with the draft.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right. The McCourty brother thing.
But they're already here.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they've lost Jamie Collins, Kyle Van Noy, Elandon Roberts, Daron Harmon, and Danny Shelton off their defense.
They lost five real players from their defense. They haven't added anything of significance to their defense.
It's kind of an incomplete until the draft takes place, but right now it's I can't call what they've done so far really loading up on defense. Not when you consider the losses and what they've gotten in return right now.
They kind of did between two and three then, because they're not
three is middle it with Brady. So yeah. No, two and four is what you're saying.
Yeah, two and four. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
they middled it without Brady,
but they haven't because they haven't added to either side of the ball. They haven't made any real moves on either side. They haven't really done much. It's been sort of a quiet offseason, obviously, for the Patriots. The draft will look different, and the draft will maybe change our minds, and we revisit it again after the draft, no doubt about it. It just feels like right now they don't have a named starting quarterback. I don't know if that means anything. I think Stidham is the guy, so whatever. But they haven't said that, and all indications are, according to Brian Hoyer's camp, they're going to camp and they're going to have a full competition. So
yeah, but
they don't
Nick Casario's board at draft time, who's the number one quarterback they have at the top? And you have to have them structured because they're not right next to each other. It's Stidham. Okay? Because you didn't go into this offseason thinking, you know what, if Tom leaves,
I agree.
We'll get Brian Hoyer. Brian Hoyer can play here. You know? No.
So they've lost starters. They've lost starters and sort of higher on the depth chart reserve guys. Daron Harmon will put in that category. And they lost Tom Brady. And they don't have a named starting quarterback as of right now. That feels like you're rebuilding. That doesn't feel like you're in the middle of going for it and adding on both sides of the ball. And that's okay, but it just turns out that they and I don't even know that it's a perfect example of a rebuild, because in a full rebuild, you're probably not signing Devin McCourty. So they're sort of in between options, and I think they're closer to that than any of the four. They don't perfectly fit into any of the four groups, is what I would say at this given point in time.
We don't know what they are.
No, and I mean, I was so thrown off by, you know, the Brady departure. I was fully invested on Brady being back and having one of the scenarios play out with Brady here as part of the mix. And, you know, with Brady here, that changes things significantly. Would it change the salary cap situation? I'm surprised they haven't done more without Brady being here.
You'd have more faith in the offense if Brady was here. I'm with you. Like, to me, like, Brady coming back, it was an afterthought to me. Like, they got to bring him back.
Yeah, and I don't even know if you were all in on it the way I was, though. I really didn't consider the possibility of the Patriots moving on from Brady and going with Jared Stidham as their, you know, presumed starting quarterback for 2020. So everything has to be recalibrated in my head. And had you told me this was going to be the case, I would say, well, they're absolutely going to load up on defense then. They're going to take whatever money they save by not having to pay Brady, you know, for this year and next year, and they're going to invest in the defense, and they're going to try and get something, you know, as solid as they can around Stidham or do something else quarterback-wise. Maybe they'll spend that money on a different quarterback somehow, but it's kind of been a middling without Brady. which was not one of the scenarios.
Yeah. So let's talk about something else that may fall in line with this or may help us further understand it. And that is the idea that the Patriots might or should, according to some, cut Mohamed Sanu. And I want to get into that question. We'll also talk about Tua because there's more news on Tua from Mike Lombardi in the last day or so. We'll do that coming up at noon. But coming up next, should the Patriots consider cutting Mohamed Sanu and what would that achieve? Let's do it right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Zulak and Bertrand on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Zoe and Bertrand.
Offset eye formation as Brady drops back, throws it across the middle, and a drop by Sanu.
Wake up!
And he's shoved to the turf, where they hit by the Dolphins defensive back, Nate Brooks, adding the insult to
I'm
the
sorry,
drop.
You got to read blitz here. You're the underneath drag route. You, in essence, become the hot route. The distant safety is coming down on you. You see the backer vacate. Landon Roberts cuts his legs out. Brady hangs in, gets hit, delivers it right into your hands, and you drop another hot route underneath. That's not worth the second round pick to me. Zoe on Sanu, hitting him hard there.
Yeah, that's after about what his game? Third drop. That was probably Cincinnati on an underneather.
That was the Dolphins remember. Game, last regular season game of the season. That was the play before the Eric Rowe 35-yard interception for a touchdown.
Oh, great. Yeah, that's probably, and you know why? That's why. You're right, Jim. Good call. Because I said, so apropos, so fitting to throw the pick six there after that. Because, you know what? Screw you. I'm going to force it to you. You're not going to get separation. Ball gets deflected. Pick six. Perfect.
That was the
perfect
play when Sanu was wide open, and he still threw it to Edelman anyways. And then he got pick six. Yeah.
No, I remember that.
Hey, it could have been Houston, where he had two underneath drops, dragging right to left. But then you hear from people close to him that he was hurt. So, hey, he's $6 million bucks. You tell me what a pro-caliber receiver makes in the National Football League. Because right now, you only have one. His name's Julian Edelman. You got to keep him at $6 million. And I know if you cut him, you save $6.5 million in cap space.
Here's a story from Bleacher Report. It says, the Patriots will move on without quarterback Tom Brady, but the front office doesn't have much cap space to maneuver in the trade market or to pick up free agents outside of the bargain bin. The Patriots are bailing water with $893,000 in cap space. It's $893,436 is the number. They have 12 picks going into the draft. New England could package some of its selections to move up for a prospect or acquire talent, but the salary cap restrictions won't allow the front office to land impact veterans who seek moderate payouts. In addition to Brady, New England lost key playmakers on defense, including the guys we named last segment, Danny Shelton, Jamie Collins, Kyle Van Noy, and Daron Harmon.
Danny Shelton's, you know, he doesn't get talked about with that rest of the crew like, you know, a Van Noy does or, you know, an impact player does. Because Shelton gave you some good, some good games, man. He really did. He held it down the middle with Lawrence Guy there.
I was a fan of Danny Shelton. I thought we were going to actually. I was like sort of expecting him to be back next year.
It's not a big guy. It wasn't oversized, too. You know?
Like I viewed him as one of those guys that they'd probably be able to fit, but, man, they are really up against the cap. So Shelton leaves, and I think he's going to get better. I just think it felt like he was getting better. He was obviously considered sort of a draft bust, but
yeah.
All right, so Shelton, Collins, Van Noy, Harmon, you can add a Landon Roberts to that, too, as a depth guy. And it says in this piece, in order to fill those holes and add depth, the Patriots should consider multiple cuts before and after the draft. prior to the trade deadline in 2019. New England traded a second-round pick to the Falcons for Mohamed Sanu. He struggled through 8 games, recording 26 receptions for 207 yards and a touchdown. He had off-season ankle surgery. So Sanu is going into a contract year with no dead money. The Patriots should rely on Julian Edelman and 2019 first-rounder N'Keal Harry as their top wideouts for 2020. New England can also dip into a strong pool of wide receivers in this year's draft class to round out its three-man sets. When you say, nope, you got to keep Sanu, right?
I think you need players on the outside. You need perimeter help. Julian Edelman's your only other guy right now. Dorsett is gone. Unless you're dependent upon Jacoby Myers. I mean, and unless you want to draft guys or bring free agents in and have them grow instead of and get ready for the bumps and the bruises. You know? I mean, how many more times can you flex James White out and use him too? But I think Brady was brilliant at using him. Can sit him get to that point with White. It's almost you look at White and say, oh, we got James White, but we don't have Tom Brady. What are we doing?
Don't we have to rethink everything without Tom Brady?
Yes, yes. That's my point.
Yes, absolutely. Like
think up front. I mean, is Joe Tooney tradable? Yeah, he's on the franchise tag, but with that number there, we're going to redo him or you want to trade him.
Okay, you know? I would expect that he gets an extension.
I would think so, too. Yes.
Which is why. I mean, he's 27. No, I'd like that. That, to me, is the wrong move to make. Because you don't have Tom Brady, you consider trading Joe Tooney? He's 27. Get him signed up long term. Keep him.
And good player. Doesn't miss games, right?
Like, he's a guy who's part of your core, your next sort of core group of guys. Whereas Mohamed Sanu, what's the future for Mohamed Sanu after this year? Because under the assumption that Brady was going to be here, I was fully against the idea of moving on from Sanu. I thought that was crazy when we discussed this. This came up at the end of the season. And we discussed this a little bit at the end of the season. And we sort of dismissed it because we had assumed, well, if Brady's here, you're not going to cut Sanu.
Right.
Like, even if he's not featured and is a top guy, you still want him on the roster. And he's still reasonable, monetarily speaking.
You want some guys that have been out there in certain third and seven, third and eight situations to be able to function somewhat out of a huddle. You know, and some of these rookies, they'd let it go down their leg. You know, we've seen that a little bit last year. I just think you need help on the outside, and I just think at that number, okay, it's $6 million for him, for that type of player, you pay it.
Yeah, $6 million for Mohamed Sanu puts
him. What if he takes a pay cut? What if he takes a pay cut?
He could.
Yeah, I'd go to him and say, hey, we want you, but we could cut you. You want to get picked up elsewhere and only make $3 or $4 million? Or you could stay here. We like you. You like us. And just play for $4 million here. And that might happen. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, his salary at $6.5 million puts him at like the 40th highest paid receiver. Like, he's
for
not
a guy that's played, Beetle. The guy's played in this league. And he's played in big games. He's played in good offenses. What can he do healthy? I'd like to see what he can do healthy. Because obviously they saw something in there to throw him back here on punts. That's how he got hurt.
Yeah, it's a nice position with Mohamed Sanu because you can ask him to restructure right now or take a bit of a pay cut. And
Brandon Cooks, you couldn't.
You can you can run the risk of offending him. That's the nicest way I can put it. You
know, it's a great way to put it, Hardy.
It's like, oh, what if you piss him off? Okay.
No problem.
I mean, I have no problems with Mohamed Sanu, but I also don't think he is integral to the, you know, 3-4-5 year plan of this team either. Yeah, I want him here next year, and I think he could be very serviceable, and you might even see more success. Zoe brought this up earlier and again kind of referenced it. You might even see more success with Mohamed Sanu with a different quarterback for whatever reason. You know, Tom Brady wasn't, you know,
Stidham's worked with him in practice when Brady couldn't go too. So it's not, there's a little bit of inherent knowledge there.
There might be something there that we didn't see from him before, but if he gets really, really pissed off and he is in some way disgruntled, okay. It's not a make or break type of player.
Yeah, and I want to see Josh have pieces too. I mean, if you're Josh, like, do you really want to? Are we starting over here in a rebuild where you got aging Edelman, and we're gonna have three young rookie receivers and some free agent guys coming in, and I got to mix and match this thing again? Still don't have a damn tight end. We still don't know who the freaking tight end's gonna be. Here we are, a year and a half after. I mean, we're still going on this thing.
That's unbelievable.
It really is.
Situation is still
because Ebron was
out there for $6 million.
I don't want to
call it non-existent. But to go from what you have.
Tyler Eifert, Ebron, these guys were out there. Jimmy Graham, you can have these guys. They don't want them. They're drafting someone. They could just throw a rookie out there.
Interesting. I was just looking at, as you guys were talking about this, I was looking at Fantex. Have you ever heard of them, Zoe?
No. No, I have not. Fantex?
Yeah. F-A-N-T-E-X. Fantex.
Yes.
Have you heard of them, Hardy?
No.
So what they do is they buy, and I just remember this as we were talking about Mohamed Sanu, that he's one of these Fantex guys. What it is they sell off a piece of their future earnings to the company. So Mohamed Sanu sold 10% of his future earnings to Fantex going back to 2016.
In exchange for what?
Excuse me. I actually believe he signed it prior to that. He signed it in November of 2014. My mistake. So what happens is he sold to the company, you will get 10% of my future earnings for X amount of dollars right now to me. That's what he has promised them. And then individuals can buy shares of certain individual players. So if you thought in 2014, Mohamed Sanu, this guy's going to get a big contract, I'm going to buy a share of that 10%. You could buy into it. I was wondering if that at all impacted whether or not he could actually agree to a pay cut. If there was something, but it appears that Fantex players can agree to pay cuts, that is understood as part of it. So that's what I was looking at. Sanu is one of those Fantex guys. 10% of his earnings go to them. He already sold it off back in 2014.
I'm sorry, Beetle, and I was listening, but what does he get in return when he sold it off?
So they they paid him a lump sum up front for
what they expected him to make, or just for whatever current contract he was under?
No, for the rest of his career. So you sell off, as a younger player, 10% of your earnings or whatever percentage you decide to Fantex for a lump sum upfront payment.
Oh, so it's like the lottery situation. It's like, are you getting an annuity from a payout over 20 years?
Yeah, sort of like that.
We'll give you a bunch of money upfront now.
Yes. Yeah, similar idea.
Okay, I got it.
And so they believe that in the long term, if they take some of these bets on players, they'll make more money back. But
gotcha.
The player got the money up front, and they can do whatever they want with it right away. So that was something that's a side topic on Mohamed Sanu. But he is allowed under that Fantex thing to take pay cuts if he were to restructure. But I'm more with you. Like, if you can keep him and maybe do it at a reduced rate, it's a good idea. But I'm not totally opposed to it. I wouldn't be upset if it happened because they had another good opportunity in front of them.
Right, no, I think he's one of those veteran bubble guys. I do.
Yeah, but if another good opportunity comes along and you need to free up the space, then I'll understand it now. But if Brady were still here, I'd say, no, you got to keep
him. It'd be a no-brainer.
You invested the pick, you got to keep him. But who knows what his future would be here after this coming season. Let's talk about Tua, because there's new reports on Tua, and I know that there are some Patriots fans that would like to see them get in the mix for this guy.
People need to chill out.
Mike Lombardi's got something on that. You'll hear it coming up.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.